No, I think that that's. I'm grateful for your call, Susan, and your lovely words, but I wouldn't concur with that analysis. Because what you suggest is that the government of Mahmoud Abbas is somehow a traitor government. And I can't go along with that. I've known these people for a very, very long time, more than 35 years in his case. And just this week in Paris, I was interviewing a former prime minister briefly and a former foreign minister lengthily of the Palestinian Authority, Nabil Shaath, and current minister in the Palestinian government, Mohammed Shtia, both of whom I have known for a very, very long time. In Shtia's case, since he was a student, in Nabil Shaath's case, since the 1970s in Beirut. And they are all part of Mahmoud Abbas's apparatus, and I cannot agree that they are traitors. I do think that Mahmoud Abbas is wrong, or has been wrong, but perhaps this is the day to celebrate that he is right. He is right to conclude that this farce in Washington is going nowhere. He is right to conclude that the Palestinians need to be one hand. They need to have one address. They have to face the world as one people, not as a divided people, even geographically divided. One last point, Susan, then I'll let you back in. I do think that, and this is only my personal opinion, it's not Press TV's opinion, still less is it the opinion of Iran, but if I was in their shoes, I would abolish the Palestine National Authority, which is neither national nor does it have any authority. But it does serve as a useful lipstick to the so-called international community and the ongoing occupation to pretend that there is a Palestine National Authority. I would say to the world, to the United Nations, here's the keys. We are no longer prepared to run this farce. And if our people rise up in a new intifada against the colonial foreign occupation of their land, we will support them. That's what I would do if I was in their position. Go on, Susan, come back to me.
Absolutely. I want nothing more than share your optimism, George. And, you know, from your mouth to God's ears, I think that's kind of like a Jewish saying, but let's go with that. And I hope for the best. I hope that it would work out. I hope that they can at least unite, because God knows it's, you know, seven decades overdue, this unification, this, you know, banding together and, you know, standing against oppression, and it's a matter of human dignity.
I mean, Susan, thank you very much for the call. Don't be a stranger. Stay in touch with us.
From
sunny California.
Bye-bye.
That was Susan. Now back to London to talk to Irfan, who wants to talk about the very same subject. Irfan, welcome back to the show, my friend. Go on.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam.
I did say I would give you a call to catch up, but I wasn't thinking.
I'm a very, very busy man, Irfan, as you know. Go ahead, son.
But let's get to the crux of the matter. Now, I didn't want to talk specifically about what's the biggest threat to Israel, but I was watching the BBC News today, and needless to say, that Israel is a propaganda master. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu kept talking about this word peace and said that the Palestinians are Islamists, and sort of comparing them to Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
There needs to be a dichotomy made between Al-Qaeda and between Hamas. One's a transnational, you know, pan-Islamist movement, you know, that's not a national resistance. Whereas Hamas is a national resistance movement. But the point of this matter is, in a wider context, Tony Blair, who was emoting that Ariel Sharon's funeral only a while ago, made a speech at the Bloomberg event in London earlier this year, where he was talking about about, you know, terrorism and Islamism and extremism and how it's a threat. But of course, the real reason why these sorts of people arise is because, as you said in one of your lectures, they're not perhaps directly said, but you adumbrated about, you know, George Francois and the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which literally drew a map across the Muslim world and the Muslim and the Arab world. And these Muslims who reject this model, who reject this nationalistic, jingoistic, flag-based, you know, trench-driven structure, seek to be pan-Islamists and seek to reunify themselves around the world. And that's a threat to the Western powers, because for them, a divided Muslim world, a nationalist Muslim world, where they'd be fighting each other instead of dealing with the actual force, is better. And this is why Tony Blair has tried to ossify the borders in the Middle East. This is why Prince Charles was dancing in Saudi Arabia. This is why the Western powers still have a very keen interest, because the fact of the matter is this division, this bifurcation of the entire Middle East has not yet stopped, and in fact it's going further. And Libya, which is now, as you say, becoming 3 Libyas or 33 Libyas, and Syria, which is now becoming 6 Syrias or 12 Syrias, is only in their interest, because it again further divides people. It poisons them against each other, and it means that their power structure, their global power structure, which they've implanted and dug in and placed it there, remains firmly firm and strong.
Well, that's a very remarkable telephone call, Irfan, and a masterful tour de horizon. And it's the more remarkable in that Irfan is a schoolboy in Newham in London, whom I know well. And he's learning his lessons well, don't you think? Well done, Irfan. I don't disagree with anything that you said, and I'm not going to try and better it. You're a credit to your parents and to your teachers. Doreen is on the line in Vancouver on the west coast of Canada, so we better hear from her. It's a long way away on the subject of what they call Israel. Doreen, welcome back to the show.
Oh, yes, George.
Hello. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Yes, George, I was just about to say Julian and Gary kind of stole my thunder.
Nobody could steal your thunder, Doreen. Just give me some different thunder. Go on.
Yes. Yeah, I did watch that on RTV with Sergei Lafayette, and what a politician.
Oh,
what
wow. He's world class.
I just think he's just so, he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, that man does.
Well, one thing you can be sure of, Doreen, is that neither he nor I will ever win the Nobel Peace Prize. But go ahead. They gave it to themselves last year. Go on.
Yeah, the threat that Israel is concerned about is Iran being on the same playing field as them.
That's right.
Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, but can you imagine if they did? Would Israel still be threatening them? And apparently, under a law that was made, international law that was made in 1968, every time Israel threatens Iran, that is it's a war crime type of deal.
Israel is guilty of many war crimes against Iran and others, Doreen. Every time an Iranian scientist is assassinated by the state intelligence forces of Israel, this is a crime, casus belli. Iran would be fully entitled to retaliate in kind, but does not do so. And moreover, has forsworn nuclear weapons, unlike Israel, which has hundreds of them. Doreen, I got to go because I want one last caller, Judith, who's in the United Kingdom, on the same subject. Judith, go ahead. Judith, you're on the air.
Good evening, George.
Good evening. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to... It's a small anecdote, really. 12 years ago, my eldest daughter, she was living and working out in Palestine. She was an international. And during the Second Intifada, the Israelis had come in and done their usual sort of trick of bulldozing refugee schools, etc. And anyway, she was helping to rebuild this school, and she got... to give the children something to do. She got them to draw pictures, and when she came back to the UK, she showed me these pictures. And these children she was helping out with were anything between about, I don't know, 6 years old and 10 years old. And she showed me their drawings. Now, they weren't typical children's drawings. They showed caterpillar bulldozers, and they showed F-16s, and they showed their friends dead in the street, all this sort of stuff. Pretty horrific. But high above everything else was the Palestinian flag. And I think this goes to show that no matter what the Israelis try, that sense of self, that Palestinian sense of self is not going to go away no matter what they try. No matter what the Israelis try. So the sooner we get a solution to this, preferably a one-state solution, where everybody can at least attempt to live together and get rid of this terrible, dreadful state of apartheid, apartheid as bad as anything that ever existed in South Africa or the southern United States, the better, I think.
I mean, Judith, what a wonderful call. Some wonderful callers this evening. Don't be a stranger. Come back. Often.
I'd love to.
Hans in Germany is the last caller, and it's on Ukraine. Hans, go ahead quickly, sir. Hans, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead, sir. You're talking to the whole world.
Yeah, but George is now talking to Judith.
I'm talking to you, Hans. You've got the television volume up. You need to have it at zero.
Yes, I know. No, but George, in the program, there's Judith talking. I don't know. Anyway, okay, I just have a few words to this Ukraine so-called crisis.
Hans?
Yes?
Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Yes. Now, just a few words to the so-called Ukraine crisis. You know, what worries me most or what annoys me most is that the European Union, you know, act, to my impression, like a longer arm of the United States. I mean, what has the United States to do with the Ukraine? It's they are far away, and of course they have their interests. They want to push the NATO border, if you wish, closer to Russia. You know, but it's surprising how blue-eyed these Ashton and Pompey and the others went to Kiev to sign this association. Yes? Treaty, you know, the next step is member of the EU, and the next step is, of course, member of the NATO. And, I mean, it's for Russia, it's not tolerable.
It's not tolerable and will not be tolerated. Thanks for that, Hans. Let me squeeze in 25 seconds of Ali in San Francisco. Ali, make your point in 25 seconds. Go on.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, how are you, Mr. George? How are you doing?
Good, but you've only got 20 seconds. Now, hurry up.
Okay. I just want to have some points regarding the Ukraine, you know, Russia problems, you know. Okay, and what's happening is, I don't understand that. You see, I have my wife, she's Russian, and her mother, she's Ukrainian, you know.
Well, we'll need to hear your family story on another occasion, because I'm quite out of time. But if you've enjoyed the show, come back next week. God willing, I'll be here. Until then, may you go in peace.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.